Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Welcome back to this week's edition of The State of Recruiting, your weekly Horns 24/7 recruiting podcast. I'm Mike Roach, and I'm joined by Hudson Standish for what I think is our first ever early morning show. It is about 7:30 here Friday morning, but this is when we could get it in this week, and I got to tell you guys, I'm dragging a little bit. Got in at midnight last night from driving to Austin and back, and probably didn't get to sleep till about 2. So I'm going to try to fight through this, but I think we should have a good show. Hudson, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Mike. Yeah, just ready to get going.
All right, we're going to get into it. We've got on our show today, we're going to talk a little bit about wrapping up the Jordan Addison recruitment. We're going to talk about state track and field, and then we are going to kind of look ahead to some summer visits. So for those of you who haven't seen Jordan Addison, the Pittsburgh wide receiver transfer who we've been talking about for quite a bit on the site over the last couple of weeks, made his decision choosing USC yesterday, Thursday, as you're hearing this. And I think for us, it's that wasn't a big surprise. For Horns 24/7 readers, it's kind of what we've been pointing to. I think that when Addison entered the portal, USC was the heavy favorite. Texas was able to get him on campus for a visit. And from everything I've heard, the visit went really well. It made it a real race between the two. But, you know, our contention was kind of always if he left Austin uncommitted, it probably wasn't going to end up well for Texas. That's kind of exactly what happened. And, though we heard a little rays of hope here and there from people over the weeks, the overwhelming majority was that a lot of people just didn't have a good feel for it. And anytime that's the case on one side, I just don't feel like it's good for them. So if you're a Horns 24/7 subscriber, I think you probably were prepared for that when he did pick USC.
Yeah, I almost think that it was, we covered it well on that regard to the point to where a lot of Horns 24/7 subscribers believed, okay, well, he just took the visit as a courtesy. This was all smoke screen. And I mentioned that as a possibility really early on in the Addison recruitment, but I don't know how you feel, Mike, with it wrapped up now, but I really do feel like he gave Texas a legitimate shot. Once we heard that he took the USC visit and there was a little hesitation, I think that proved there was no smoke screen and that it was a real thing. But at the same time, as we reported and kind of, held firm throughout the process, the fact that he left Texas uncommitted, it just seemed like it was a matter of time almost before he ended up signing that financial aid agreement with the Trojans.
Yeah, I didn't see it as a smokescreen. I think that he was giving Texas a legitimate look. And, I think smokescreen or not, like, for anybody who's talking about, they had to cover up that there was tampering. No, they didn't. Like, he could have gone into the portal when he did and committed to USC the next day and nothing probably would have happened. So, I think he did give Texas a real look. It didn't work out for him in this case. And, they'll have to move on. Still a very successful portal season. Still a lot of weapons they were able to acquire from the portal. Would have been great to add Addison to that. But I think, they go into the season with some real firepower on offense. And, and USC, I mean, if you talk about roster reconstruction and loading some weapons quickly, that's going to look very different now in Los Angeles with Caleb Williams and Mario Williams, now Jordan Addison, a lot of guys there that are going to make for some exciting ball on the West Coast.
Yeah, and another thing too, Mike, there's still some options for Texas in the portal. There are not a ton, but this Diamante Tucker Dorsey kid from James Madison is a really interesting one. The Athletics, Max Olson, and our own Chris Hummer have kind of all been over that one, saying that he could even potentially visit Texas next weekend. So there's still some intriguing portal options, but I think you're fair to say that it pretty much has wrapped up as far as the true recruiting season, with Jordan Addison being one of the probably last true five-star portal targets that we'll have in the cycle.
Yeah, I think from here on out, it's probably going to be grad transfers, and those guys aren't likely to be rated as highly unless for some reason, some guy we're not thinking about right now all of a sudden decides to grad transfer. I don't think you're going to see those. So, yep, it was a successful portal season, I think, for Texas. Would have liked to have won that one, but I think they're happy with what they got. All right, Hudson, let's move on to our next segment. You and I went down to Austin last week for a state track and field. We're able to see a few different guys, and wanted to talk a little bit about that. So I think for us going in, one of the main events of that was watching Brendan Thompson run his sprints. And, Brendan Thompson's all obviously been able to post these incredible times, going 10-1, multiple times. But there is always, the question of, is he being aided along by that West Texas wind that he's running, with, and how's he going to run in Austin, and how does he run on this track? Well, I don't think he needed the wind, and he seemed to do just fine. I was not able to watch his 100 because I was at a practice, but I did make it back in time to watch his 200. But I think, for us, we were really interested to just kind of see how he did, and I was shocked at watching your video of him running the 100 and watching him run the 200 live, how much he just blew away the entire field.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty remarkable to watch. I think that all Texas fans probably got even a little bit more excited just seeing him put down a pretty easy 10-2. And then in the 200, I believe he finished with a 20.73, which I don't believe was wind legal, but if it was, it would have shattered the 3A record. So Brendan Thompson put on an absolute show in Austin. And I think justified his decision not to enroll early and to come back and truly, make up for his junior year, where he only finished first in the 200 and got second in the 100. So successful state track meet for the Spearman Lynx, Brendan Thompson.
Yeah, and I think, that was a huge part of his motivation, was to come back for the spring and really accomplish those track goals that he set out to do. And, congratulations to him. And I know he wanted to finish on a good note there. Elsewhere around the meet, we were able to see Ruben Owens. We were able to see Darian Gillette. We were able to see Corion Gibson. There are a bunch of different names. Hudson, who really stood out to you from their performances?
Yeah, I think that all track season, I have been talking about how freaky Darian Gillette is, what he's been doing, but seeing him almost chase down two smaller, probably in straight line speed, much faster people in the 4x100 meter relay as the anchor leg at 6'3", 230 pounds was pretty incredible to see. I think that just with the vast amount of events that he's in, doing different things, whether it's shot, triple jump, sprints, I think that he, along with a fellow linebacker in the 2023 class, Anthony Hill, who everybody knows as a five-star caliber talent, I mean, they're just absolute freaks, and they proved it on the track, which is what, as evaluators and as college coaches, what people really ask of them. And I think that when they show it, they kind of need their flowers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Gallette running anchor on both 4x1 and 4x2 for Marlin. And I mean, like you said, just really almost chasing down some guys. I mean, the only guys he couldn't beat was Refurio, who ended up winning both events. And then their anchor guy won the 100 as well. So really impressive just to see that big body moving like that. And then Anthony Hill running on Denton Ryan's 4x1 that won silver at the event. Both those guys are just, like you said, it, tremendous athletes, specimens, both really good football players as well. And, you know, with Anthony in general, I was talking, you know, with somebody yesterday. I think Anthony's been like the best football player in the state for the last 2 years, like just pure football player, top to bottom. When, you know, seeing guys, I think of Anthony Hill as like the most consistent, best performer. And to see him out on the track running like that, he certainly doesn't have to, and you don't see a lot of linebackers do it. It really cemented kind of his status for me. We also got to see a few other guys. Beckville's Jacoby Williams, who Texas offered not too long ago, running the 110 hurdles. Talk about a guy who really smoked the field as well. I thought he was pretty impressive. And then your guy, Terry Bussey from Timpson, was able to compete in a few events. And I got kind of my first look at him.
Yeah, no, but the small school talent for state track is always going to be there. Because it's just kind of that small school mentality of, you know, your best athletes kind of do everything. There's a lot less specialization. So your 2A, 3A, 4A in a lot of states, the smaller classifications, the media doesn't even show up because it's not worth it until the big schools arrive. But in Texas, it's kind of different, where, you know, there are going to be studs at basically every classification. And we had that with Texas. I mean, in 2A, you had Darian Gallette. In 3A, you had Brennan Thompson. And 4A, you had Reuben Owens. I mean, that's a lot of combined stars for, you know, your three smallest classifications in the state.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, as far as covering it, it was my first year to cover state track. I don't know why. I've just always been kind of busy that weekend. But I thought it was a good event. You know, the parking situation could have been a little better. It was a long walk back and forth from the garage. But other than that, you know, I think Mike A. Myers, especially after having gone to the Louisiana State Track Meet a couple of weeks ago, I think Mike A. Myers Stadium is, you know, an incredible facility to host it. You know, the UIL was pretty, they're always, you know, pretty good deal on that front. So, really enjoyed it. Wish we could have stayed around for 6A. I mean, watching those guys run is always fun, but had some personal stuff I had to get back in town for. So, weren't able to see the top guys run, but maybe next year we'll be able to, do that. All right. Before we move on to our next subject, we're going to, I believe this is the part where we will, if you're listening on the podcast, we're going to take a short break. You can hear from our sponsors. And if you're watching on YouTube, we'll continue to roll right on.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right. It's the biggest thing going forward, I think, is what or what as far as what's next would be summer visits. And official visits are really starting to stack up. Everybody's getting them in line and got a lot of dates from a lot of kids. And I would say looking over, you know, kind of summer visits as a whole, it seems like, for one, the headline is that June 24th weekend is going to be the big one for Texas. I think that they want to get a lot of guys in that weekend and really make that a huge recruiting weekend. I think a lot of their top targets are already scheduled for that. Which I'm trying to figure out, you know, how it's going to work, because yeah, I think a lot of those guys might be in the state 7-on-7 tournament, and that's going to be that weekend as well. But, you know, we'll see kind of how that goes as guys qualify and we kind of know the field for state 7-on-7. But I think, you know, the summer was big last year. It was, you know, just consecutive weeks of big news and a lot of content. I'm a little surprised they're stacking it as much as they are. I know last year that they kind of thought, well, maybe, you know, we should save some of these visits for the fall, or maybe we should have, you know, put some of these off. But I think for a lot of these kids who want to make summer decisions, Texas wants to get in there and make their impression. Hudson, what are a couple of the guys you really think, or you're looking forward to seeing kind of how things go this summer and what the buzz is coming out of their visit?
I think everybody that's going to be on campus for the big June 24th through 26th visit is big. I'm kind of more interested, though, in the guys that Texas wasn't able to get in that prime last official visit spot. If they're kind of able to make up ground or push to an extent to where getting that last official visit won't matter as much. Even a kid who does have Texas slotted in that weekend, but it's not his last official visit, like Anthony Hill. Can Texas do enough to really make up ground in that recruitment, take a lead, and then get it to the point to where going into Anthony Hill's final official visit with A&M, they give him everything to think about? With a kid like Cedric Baxter, who's going to be coming in, I believe, June 10th through June 12th, can Texas do enough to where if he takes his last official visit with Miami that they can put that lingering thought in his head? With the kids who end up qualifying for state track and field, I think we've seen this before, Mike, but it turns into one of the true double-edged swords. And just how savvy is this Texas recruiting staff? Because on one hand, if the kids just took three official visit weekends and you're able to delay their official visit to Texas for a month without them deciding, it's a pretty objective good thing, because you just are creating almost a month more of space. It's not your fault that The official visit had to be pushed back. It's clearly just a scheduling problem with state track and field. But then you get to
state, seven on seven.
Yeah, state 7-on-7. But then you just get to be more of a solo experience. Because with these kids, sometimes if they stack their visits, how we're kind of seeing where it's 4 weeks back to back, even though they're in hotels and it is luxury, they're also getting pitched almost every single day. And it does become kind of a drain. I mean, we've seen that with how many kids. So even though you do want that last official visit, I mean, sometimes you get kids where they're kind of dreading going on the last trip.
Yeah, I think visit fatigue is a real thing. But I think the other side of that coin you talked about are kids who hold themselves to these timelines that they don't necessarily need to. And we saw it last year with Bryce Anderson, who go and you get a half visit after going to state 7-on-7 and competing there.
Exactly.
Probably exhausted from the tournament. And then all of a sudden it's okay, right? We're going right to Austin. And then now you're on for this visit. So yeah, I mean, it's always a weird game to play. Always a weird weekend to have it, but it sounds like they're going to, sounds like they're going to have their big weekend that weekend. I think if we talk, there's a couple of guys in this class who they probably need to have a great weekend with to kind of rebound. And I think a couple of guys in this class that they're in a better place than a lot of people are giving them credit for. I'm going to give you one of each of those categories, and if you've got one, you can as well. I'm going to take one of your guys who, I saw last week and absolutely loved up close in a practice viewing. I think Colton Vosick, if they can, you know, I know everybody's excited to kind of figure out where things stand with him, and Colton hasn't let a lot out, and I know there's a lot of big programs recruiting him. Colton has not released his official visits. He's asked me to kind of keep those quiet, so I'm not going to tell you when that is, but he is, I do believe he will visit Texas. And I think Texas will get a chance to make a statement. Can they win over a guy who I, after seeing him last week, I think, you know, and matching it up with his production and film last season, I think is a top 15, possible top 10 player in the state. Pretty easy. Can they win him over? And then a guy that I don't think too many people are giving them a chance about, and there's starting to be a lot of chatter about at receivers, DeAndre Moore, coming in from California. I think everybody thinks that's a done deal to USC. I don't think that's necessarily the case, and I haven't for a while. I've been kind of saying since I saw DeAndre in Las Vegas that Texas is absolutely in this race. He'll be coming in for a visit. I think he's on the 23rd or the 24th weekend. And I think Texas could emerge from the summer the outright leader to land DeAndre Moore. And if that happens, you know, that's a huge, huge pickup at the receiver position. Anybody who kind of fits that mold for you, Hudson?
Real quick on Vosick and Moore. One, it's been funny, me included. I mean, you know, obviously before I took the job with 24/7, we talked, and you'd always say, like, Texas has a legit shot with DeAndre Moore. And I don't know what it was, maybe just the immediate Lincoln Riley to USC factor. I was just like, I don't know, Mike. And then slowly then taking the job with 24/7, getting the full behind-the-scenes intel and being like, oh, okay, they really do have a shot, to now you've kind of held the same position for the last 3 months or so, and seeing it trickle across, you know, the various recruiting landscape has been kind of fun to watch, because I feel like, you know, the Horns 24/7 subscribers have known for a while that DeAndre Moore is a real possibility, but everybody else in the Texas recruiting, you know, Twitter sphere kind of finding out has been fun. And then with Vosick, what a roller coaster it's been just to this point. And obviously none of that is the kid's fault, but for Texas fans, he really blows up during the fall. I think I write my first thing about him in November when he doesn't have an offer or he had just picked up Tulsa. AJ Milwee is the primary one recruiting him at that time and is, you know, really the only Power 5 major school to be on him. it seems like because he's a legacy that Texas is going to have the inside track and it's going to be an easy slam dunk recruitment. I wrote it from the state football press box, but he gave me a quote that was like basically just saying, yeah, I'd love to play with Ethan at the next level. Like, that'd be super easy. But then Vasek didn't stop blowing up, and he got Alabama, and he got Georgia, and he got Ohio State. He got, you know, Oregon. Everybody was on him. And for a while, it seemed like Texas was going to be the odd man out for a Westlake kid who was a legacy. So seeing that course correct has been really encouraging. And I think that Texas fans should be just about as all in on this one as they are with, I mean, every other borderline five-star, you know, four-star, five-star type in the class. Who's another one that I could potentially see in that Texas looks good for, but maybe the fans wouldn't be so sure? I think Marcus Deal is a good one, where Texas is in a really strong position and Bo Davis has kind of crushed that recruitment, but he's one, as far as the priorities go, that kind of gets left out of the wash just because there is that little bit of positional insecurity as far as do we really think he's going to play defensive line forever, or is he going to make probably the more natural switch to offensive line in the future?
So going back to Vasek, I was just talking to somebody last night about it, we were just talking about it. It's crazy that all those schools came out to see Ethan Burke, and he blew up and, you know, got his offers and everything. And they didn't look down the other side of the line and go, hey, maybe while we're here, we should offer this kid as well, who is looks like an exact clone, probably a little better off physically from a body perspective, and is playing at a similarly high level. So,
yeah, Mike, that was something that even, you know, Guy and I talked about last year was what and here's a funny story, too. Coach O, who you and I, you know, kind of exist in the same space that we do, and for those who aren't aware, is a recruiting coordinator.
Not Ed Orgeron.
What'd you say?
Not Ed Orgeron.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say I should probably not Coach Ed Orgeron, but Coach Owens at Ferris, who does a lot of recruiting stuff, works with Texas Flex 7-on-7. We showed him Colton Vasek's film in the state championship press box, I believe during the 2A state championship game, because we were throwing out guys that either had one offer or no offers. And I said, hey, here's a legit stud for you. He's going to play in the Westlake game later. You know, we could probably get him to blow up. He watched his film and immediately was like, look, that kid does not need help with any exposure. He's going to have everybody he wants by March. And, you know, kind of came true. So I don't know, with the amount of college coaches that are at Westlake, what the holdup was with that one. It is still one of the more odd ones to me. Didn't Ryan head coach Dave Hennigan kind of had a call out earlier in the week for some college coaches? And
I saw that. It was a good tweet.
I thought that it was on the money, because as much as we're at high school campuses, you do see a lot. And essentially the tweet was saying, there are a lot of college coaches that I watch on my sideline networking with each other instead of evaluating high school kids. And then when you do get to talk to my high school kids after practice, you're inviting them for a camp in shirts and shorts when you had the opportunity to watch them take live reps and pads. So I don't know. I thought that was a little bit of a preaching moment. And that's what I was thinking as we're talking about Colton Vasek. Like, okay, when people are at Westlake, are you how do you miss a 6'6" well-built guy like that? I mean, it's just crazy to me, Mike.
Yeah. And, you know, I had obviously seen him at State. I knew how much you liked him. I thought he was a good player. I told you the other day, I said State is the worst place for me to evaluate a player, because I'm usually doing 100 different things and I'm writing in the press box and I don't get to watch as closely as I would have. So going out to Westlake's practice while we were in town, seeing him up close, watching him move laterally, watching how he's put together, I was like calling you leaving Westlake, like, okay, I see the vision. I am completely on board with this kid is an elite prospect, especially when you talk about, we've talked a lot about NFL bodies, SEC bodies. I mean, he is absolutely what you look for every bit of the way as an edge player in this class. So, yeah, I think for me, I'm really interested to see how his visit comes out.
Oh, yeah. And also, I'm sure fans are like, okay, well, Mike, if you saw him at State, like, he was the defensive MVP. He had, you know, 3.5 sacks. And, like, yes. But I think what Mike is trying to say, too, a little true peek behind the curtain, Mike was, like, breaking the Tashard Choice higher as this was going on. So when he's saying, like, it's the hardest time for me to evaluate players, with that game specifically, too, I mean, there just wasn't a lot of
Yeah, like I knew he played great, and like I saw, I saw him play, but yeah, I was like writing stories and running up and down the press box and doing stuff on the phone with people. But it was also like it's different watching a guy from a press box 300 feet up, and really going. I didn't go down on the field to that game until after the game, and really going down on the field and eyeballing a kid, you know, at practice and watching him do individual drills and some things that, you know, you don't get to see in a game. I think that that's why I like practices a lot. There's a lot you could take from practices that you don't necessarily get to see in other places. And so just that was my first time seeing him in a practice setting because he doesn't camp. So I haven't seen him in a camp setting. And I just thought, you know, oh, wow. Okay. I've always thought he was a good player, obviously, but I see the vision on making him, you know, kind of that top 10, top 15 elite type player in the state. So,
Mike, speaking about another potential kind of fringe guy, you recently saw Ian Reed.
Yeah, last night, which is why I've got bags under my eyes. And since the first time I saw Ian on film, I've really liked him. You know, I think he's, his build is what you look for in an offensive lineman. By the way, Hudson, we need to talk sometime today, maybe offline, about what Vandergriff's got coming in their system. They've got some kids coming, man, including what we were told is the next Ian Reed, and will probably be bigger or probably be better. But Ian is I just always loved a guy his size. Plays rugby, he moves like it. You can tell.
Yeah.
You
know, the only thing that translates so easily.
Yeah, the only thing that I think limits him a little bit is his length. I don't think he's just your elite long tackle, but guy that could play right tackle, guy that could play on the interior, really good kid. And he's we were talking last night. We were going over his official visits. And I'm trying to remember him off the top of my head, but like he's a true O-line guy. Like, just the coaches were like, we just really wanted to get Wisconsin interested. He's going to take a Wisconsin official visit. I mean, and to me, there's like, if you're an offensive lineman, you can do all the, if you're an elite offensive lineman, you could just say, I'm going to go to these four or five elite schools, or you could be like, I want to get Iowa and Wisconsin interested here and see what's going on. So I think Texas is in a really good position. He spoke extremely highly of Kyle Flood, who I was talking with one of our friends in the media last night who was also there. And I was just like, look, man, like, it's weird for me because I've never covered a Texas staff like this with an offensive line coach like this, but Flood just doesn't get outworked on priority guys. Like, he's just always there. And, I think that under previous coaches, that hasn't always been the case. And so it's kind of surreal to see. So I think that's why you and I have both been so bullish on the offensive line group going forward.
For sure. Mike, also kind of last thing on Ian Reed too. You and I think are pretty high compared to the consensus of where he is ranked, just across the entire industry. How close would you be? Let's say, you know, he has a pretty good start to his senior season. Would you be shocked by game six if we do our midseason evaluations and he's your number one offensive line prospect in the state? Because I honestly wouldn't.
No, I'm not sure he's not right now our number one offensive. Absolutely. Like, I'm not saying he is, but there's not an obvious one to me. I think if Marcus Thiel was not set on playing defensive line, Marcus Thiel might be my top offensive line guy in the state easy. But outside of that, I mean, I like Harris Sewell. I like TJ Shanahan. There's nobody I'm just in love with. And I really like Ian. I think Ian's a really good player. So definitely interesting. Yeah, I would be all over that. I think, in most years, Ian Reed wouldn't be your top offensive lineman, but this is kind of a down year of the cycle. And that doesn't mean that he's bad or Jaden Chapman's bad or Connor Stroh's bad. It's just you don't have that elite top end talent we saw last year in guys like Kelvin Banks and Devon Campbell.
But, yeah. It just goes to show how spoiled Texas is as a state, because I could definitely see somebody taking grievance with that, but it's the truth. Like, there's no Kelvin Banks, there's no Devon Campbell, but what we're just trying to say is Ian Reed's still so freaking good. He has nearly every offer in the country. He's fantastic.
Yeah. If you picked up this class and dropped it in another state, they would probably this is one of our top
generational. Offers. Yeah, we have a generational offensive line group.
Yeah, but it's just. I mean, when you look at it. It's next solid. To last year's class, yeah. It's solid, not spectacular.
Absolutely. I think that your top kind of core offensive line group in the state, for me at least, is Jaden Chapman, Ian Reed, and then maybe Harris Sewell, but I don't know. I've continued to watch tape, and I just think that Chapman and Reed are kind of the more intriguing options for OT or, OL1 in the state right now.
Yeah. And for listeners of the pod, readers of the website, stay tuned, because Hudson and I have discussed putting together our own top 100 list. And this summer,
we're looking for stuff to do.
All right. Anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, we appreciate you guys for listening. We appreciate you guys for playing along. Hudson, appreciate you for moving your schedule to accommodate this. And we appreciate Jordan Maton, who is producing this today, stepping in for Taylor, who is not feeling well. So thank you to everybody. We will see you guys next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.